Hello, and welcome to my podcast, John Scott Lawton's English You Know. In this third episode, carrying six chapters of my audiobook, Forever in Florence, we again follow the lives of Isabella and Francesca, who lived 500 years apart in Florence, Italy. In the odd-numbered chapters, chapters 13, 15, and 17 in this episode, we follow the life of Isabella, a young woman who's just got a job in the Academy Galleria, excited about seeing her new role, but also about meeting one of her idols, which you'll discover in this episode. Then in chapters 14, 16, and 18, we go back in time to examine the life of Francesca, a friend of Michelangelo Buonarroti, as he is still in hiding from the Medici family in the city. A few days after launch, a transcript of this episode should appear on Spotify, but if not, please contact me by email to receive a transcript of the episode, and you can then follow the audio with the transcript if you prefer. If you have any questions relating to English language learning or anything to do with this podcast series, please contact me, John Scott Lawton, at hotmail.co.uk. Thank you very much indeed. Chapter 13. Isabella and Mia agreed to have lunch together to calm down and to debrief on recent events. Choosing one of their favourite restaurants near the river, they opted to sit outside under a large canopy, away from the early afternoon sun. "What do you want, Bella? It's my turn," asked Mia. "Oh, I really just want a salad and a little Chianti. I think we've deserved it after our efforts this morning, don't you?"
"Splendid idea. I'll join you."
Mia gave the order to the smiling waiter and stretched back into her chair.
"I feel a massage coming on," joked Mia.
"We'll need one after our Pilates session. Don't forget, we've got that at 4 o'clock, replied Isabella, not rising to the provocation.
"I haven't forgotten, but that is an idea, you know. He's on duty there this evening. I checked last night, just in case. Shall we?"
"Shall we what?" asked Isabella.
"Have a massage with the Greek god that is David."
"David wasn't Greek, and this David is English. What do they know about giving a good massage?" queried Isabella.
"Trust me, you'll be amazed. Let's see if he can take on both of us at the same time."
Mia was already getting excited at the thought. She took out her phone, and within 2 minutes she had used the spa's app to book them both in at the same time.
"I booked it in as a couples session."
"Oh, hell. You mean I've got to listen to you moaning away while you're being pleasured by the Hulk?"
"Then it's your turn," Mia added.
"Don't be crude. Anyway, what do I do about the dogs? I can't leave them all day," Isabella replied.
"Rosa and Luna will be fine for an extra couple of hours."
"No, they won't," said Isabella. "You didn't see what they did to my cushions the last time you did this to me."
"No.
I'll have to rush back after this and see to them. I'll meet you at the gym at 4, or just before. Feel free to start without me." Lunch came and it was as delicious as ever. Isabella savoured every mouthful as she took in her meal of the day and drank nearly a litre of water to go with her small glass of Chianti. Mia opted for a larger glass and not of water.
"You've got to work that off later," Isabella reminded her.
"I'll be fine. Besides, I'm celebrating too," said Mia.
"Celebrating what exactly?" questioned her friend.
"I can't tell you just yet," she said. "It's not absolutely definite. I don't want to spoil the surprise if it comes off."
Isabella was more and more intrigued as Mia went on.
"Give me a clue, please."
"Well, it will be music to your ears if it happens. That's all I'm going to say."
Mia liked teasing her best friend, mercilessly at times. It was amusing and frustrating in equal measure.
"Okay, I'll pay. You go and see to the puppies, and I'll see you at the gym in a couple of hours."
Isabella took her cardigan and just draped it over her shoulders as she kissed her friend goodbye and turned for home. Her beautiful blonde hair caught the mid-afternoon sun as she emerged from the canopy. Luna and Rosa could be heard from inside the house as Isabella opened the security gate into the inner courtyard to her home. She had a split-level apartment over 2 floors, including the ground floor, which gave her the luxury of garden space immediately in front of her property. She loved this space, its shade and its light, as it changed throughout the day,
a sun trap at the right times of the day, and a cooling place to sit in the often humid evenings. She noticed the pots needed watering, and she made a mental note to do it when she got home later that evening. The soil was too hot to do it now. "Darlings, darlings, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. Mummy's home now." The dogs were near frantic as they jumped up at her. She was blessed to have them. Their affection was so natural and their love unconditional. She was definitely a dog person rather than a cat person. She prepared some light snacks for them as she allowed them to go outside for a few minutes, then called them back in to eat. There was no sign of destroyed cushions on this occasion, largely because she had not yet had chance to replace them since the last scene of destruction. She must do that this weekend, as the place was looking bare without them. Without making too much fuss of leaving, Isabella closed the door and the gate behind her and headed off for the gym. She arrived in plenty of time, enough to get changed into the kit she had picked up at home, and it was no surprise that the class had started by the time Mia arrived, a cheeky grin on her face. What has she been up to, Isabella thought. The session was a tough one, but they both enjoyed it, as always, and showered quickly before their next appointment. "Oh, I meant to ask you," Isabella said. "I need to have my hair cut. Can you book me in with your friend? She did a really nice job last time." "Okay, no problem. When were you thinking of?" asked Mia. "Any day next week after 6 o'clock, okay?" "Sure, I'll message her later," replied Mia. The pair skipped through the narrow streets and wide piazzas to bring themselves in front of the newest spa in town. It was already acquiring a solid reputation for some excellent treatments. Isabella was apprehensive about this and wasn't sure she wanted to go ahead with it. She was sure she had already imagined getting naked in front of David, but not like this. Not just for a massage, at least. She had something far more sensual, sexual indeed, in mind. "Come on, we'll be late," urged Mia. "You'd know all about that," Isabella muttered under her breath. The Michelangelo Spa was indeed a remarkable place. There were drawings that Isabella thought she recognised along the walls leading to reception. She couldn't place from where. Inevitably, there was a replica of David, the traditional one, next to the counter selling lotions and potions, and it was the only thing that didn't quite match the elegant scene because it was out of context and somewhat tacky. "Mia Gavioli and Isabella Rotolo for a massage with David, please." They were committed now. As they readied themselves for their joint session, lying side by side on the massage tables, the women looked at each other in silent anticipation. Neither really smiled. There was too much at stake. It was as if they were two horses, jockeying for position at the end of the race, neck and neck to the finish line. Who was going to win? "Mia and Isabella, who is who, please?" It was that deep English voice again, soft yet strong. Although Isabella had obviously expected to hear it, she still got a tingling sensation throughout her body when the vibrations of the sound reached her ears. The soft, tantric music playing gently in the background added to the atmosphere, and there was that scented smell again, the juniper oil, strong and sensual. David's hands reached out and touched the nape of each woman's neck as he walked between the massage tables to prepare the oils. He was wearing a baggy pair of white cotton trousers and a mid-blue t-shirt. His hands felt oversized as he pressed meaningfully at the base of their necks. "Who's first?" he asked.
Chapter 14.
Francesca slumped across the hard wooden surface of the table and sobbed uncontrollably. She had been barely able to finish the note from Michelangelo before her heart nearly burst in her chest. Her arms stretched out over the table, then she pulled them back to cradle her head. She felt immense emotional and physical pain throughout the whole body. Her legs began to shake and her dogs rushed to comfort her as they heard her now audible sobs throughout the house. Her thoughts ran to her master, lying there on his makeshift bed, underneath the Medici chapel of the Basilica di San Lorenzo. His life in ruins, his life's work under threat. At least the Pietà was now safe in Rome. Surely that would be protected from destruction. Francesca tried to think clearly, but it was impossible. She didn't have the energy or strength to lift herself from her prone state, and she collapsed into a deep but anguished, unconscious sleep. In her dreams, she remembered happier times as a child with her mother and father. Michelangelo appeared as a younger man at an outdoor picnic prepared by her parents at their country shack in the olive groves of the Tuscan countryside outside the city walls. The light summer breeze whispered gently and effortlessly through the lush trees, thick with their fruit. Francesca and her small friends ran up and down the grassy aisles in between the trees, spinning around them in absolute happiness. The air was sultry and warm, the ground hard from the lack of rain, and the birds sang as they were disturbed from the trees by the children's playing. She distinctly heard her mother's voice calling to her insistently, "Francesca, children, come now, food is ready." They ran in unison up the slight slope to the wooden and stone building that they called their country cottage, but it was nothing more than a cattle shed. Still, it served the purpose of somewhere to sleep for one or two nights while the olives were harvested later that month. Michelangelo, a dear family friend, was being introduced to nearby farmers who had gathered to join the family in their pleasure. Since his arrival, he had been chiselling at a lump of white stone with a sharp tool which Francesca's father had given him, out of which he had now fashioned a beautiful angel, about 20 centimetres tall, complete with stylized halo and wings, which he now presented to Francesca as she ran to greet him. "Bene grazie, signor Buonarroti," she exclaimed as she gratefully received her gift. "She's beautiful." "What will you call her?" asked the sculptor. "I think I will call her Isabella," delighted the little girl. "Then Isabella she is," said Michelangelo. Waking to the noise of the dogs barking, Francesca heard other sounds outside in her small courtyard, men talking loudly. This was followed by an insistent banging on the door. She peered through the small glass pane next to the door and could see the uniform of the Medici guardsmen, their swords on their hips, gleaming in the morning light. They had never visited her home before. "Signora Fabrizia, Signor Fracetti wishes to speak with you immediately," a loud voice that she did not recognise boomed. "Wait, wait, I'm not properly dressed. I will come presently," she replied. "No, you must come now. I must insist." The voice now possessed a tone of anger. Francesca tried to tidy her hair, but quickly gave up on the exercise and instead gathered it into a small bun and tightened a light headscarf over her head. She scooped fresh water for the dogs from the pail in the corner of the kitchen and gave them some food to distract them and to keep them occupied. She did not know how long she would be away from her home. There were 6 soldiers in the courtyard. Francesca paused on the step to her home for a moment and asked about the purpose of the request to attend the meeting with Signor Fracetti. No reply was given. Instead, she was escorted through her courtyard and out into the empty streets and marched to the Medici Palace. As they entered the palace courtyard, the soldiers reduced to 2, and they accompanied her all the way to her office, where Signor Fracetti was standing in the middle of the room, his hands clasped behind his back. Without any morning greeting, he began. "We have had a request to allow one of Signor Buonarroti's patrons access to his studios. Are you behind this?" "Behind what? I don't know what you are talking about." Francesca did not want to make a habit of lying, but in the circumstances, she would forgive herself on this occasion. "Maria Elena Bonetti, a senior member of the Baresi family, has been tasked with auditing his work. It seems his commercial propositions were in as much disarray as the man himself," snarled Fischetti. Francesca did not respond to the slander and instead continued pleading her innocence. "And what is that to do with me?" she asked. "We obviously cannot allow just anyone to wander around his studios. There are important artifacts there belonging to this family, and plans that I believe you are aware of. Your father is a builder, isn't he, Signora Fabrizio?" "Yes, yes, that's how I first came to know Michelangelo, Signor Buonarroti. My family and he have known each other for a long time, and they have design and building projects together." Francesca realised that she had now told Signor Fracetti rather too much, so she did not explain further. "Then perhaps you might ask your father to tell us how Buonarroti intended to complete the commissions for the church, for the Medici family, for the Baresis, and anyone else who was foolish enough to give the man work," continued the evil man. Again, Francesca thought it wise to avoid his lies and instead focus on gaining access to the studio.
Go with these two soldiers. Meet Signora Bonetti at the premises and try to reassure her that the family's commissions have not been stolen by this family and we have no desire to interfere in their business affairs.
Fascetti knew the Bracy family were some of the most influential merchants in the city, and it did not do to antagonise them any more than was necessary. Without moving his hands from his back at all, Fascetti paced out of her office and left the two soldiers to encourage Francesca back out of the palace and to the stone buildings near the River Arno that constituted Michelangelo's studios. Maria Elena Bonetti was already there, waiting for her, and they greeted each other with knowing smiles and warm hugs, out of sight of the two soldiers as they gained access to the building. The place was full of dust as the draft from the doors opening disturbed the stone fragments on the floor and the dirt that had accumulated in the weeks that the building had been closed up. Francesca and Maria Elena walked either side of the unfinished sculpture that stood proudly in the middle of the space. This was the Bracy's commission.
I must have sight of documentation relating to the purchase of the statue, Maria Elena pretended.
This gave Francesca an excuse to sift through the untidy papers in the cupboards and drawers, as well as the shelves which Michelangelo had pointed out. Maria Elena continued,
and there were other works which were at the design stage. I believe my employers are keen to review those too, to ensure that the work can be completed, should Signor Buonarroti not return.
Francesca used this as an opportunity to slip deep into the tall, heavy, dark wood cupboard which stood against the back wall of the studio, a distance away from the gaze of the soldiers who were keeping guard at the door. Here she could find the drawings for the Blessed Pietà. Exactly as Michelangelo had described, thick scrolls occupied most of the space, and she removed them into the light to examine their contents. As she peeled back the heavy, still-coiled paper, she saw again the images of her mother as the artist's model, the young face of the Virgin Mary staring back at her in downward pose, but it was definitely her mother's beautiful, delicate features she could see.
"What have you found there?" one of the soldiers shouted.
"I have found the additional work belonging to the Bracy family," said Francesca, again a lie to hide the dangerous truth.
Handing them over to Maria Elena for temporary safekeeping, Francesca turned back to some stonework she had disturbed in the dark of the cupboard. It was a small statue of an angel, carved in soft white limestone, not marble. At its base was an inscription, a name perhaps, which was hard to make out in the half-light at the back of the room. As Francesca lifted it into the daylight, coming in across the dusty air through the open doors, she could now read the name, Isabella.
Chapter 15. The massage room was warm and sultry, but not too hot, and the smells of the aromatherapy oils ebbed gently from the diffusers, creating the relaxing atmosphere so typical of these places. But this one had David. He moved deliberately around the room, having warmed the massage oils in his large hands, and moved back between the women again to assess his prey.
"You must have enjoyed the massage on Saturday, Mia. Was it to your liking?" asked David.
"Oh yes, it was lovely, thank you. Just what I needed. More of the same today, please," purred Mia like a cat that had just licked the cream off the top of a cake.
"And Isabella, we haven't met before. Do you prefer a gentle massage or one with some force?" questioned David.
That seemed a strange thing to say. Of course they'd met before, in the English class. Had he really forgotten her so quickly? And surely he'd seen her in the sculpture gallery. Even if they had not spoken on that occasion, surely he remembered her face. This would have been hard to do at the moment, admittedly, as she was lying face down with her back and legs exposed and a small towel over her buttocks. Her nose and eyes poked through the hole at the head of the table.
"Oh, I prefer a firm massage, please. Not a sports massage, but one I can definitely feel, please," replied Isabella.
"Okay, Mia, may I start with you?" suggested David.
"Oh, yes, please," she replied greedily.
David now went outside the space between them and stood to Mia's left. He began working carefully and firmly at first on her shoulders and increased the intensity as he moved slowly across her back and down her spine.
"Your muscles are warm," he said. Have you been to the gym?
Yes, we've just had a tough Pilates session and a hot shower. My muscles are definitely feeling it, replied Mia.
Then this should soothe you and relax you and ease the tension further in your body.
David was charming and polite. His soft English accent added to the ambience of the room, and it matched the echoing tones of the gentle music still playing in the background. Despite the intense work going on in her back, Mia felt the need to close her eyes and almost fall asleep. She felt as though she was in a waking dream. Isabella listened intently to the movement of David's feet on the matted floor and of the swish of the oils as it worked its way into Mia's toned body. She could feel and almost see the rhythmic movement of his legs travelling up the side of the table as he encouraged the oils into Mia's skin and pressed his large fingers and thumbs into the spaces between the vertebrae of her spine. The feeling of drowsiness intensified for Mia, and even Isabella was being hypnotized by the energy within the room, which was building into waves of sensation and emotion. She too felt her eyes feeling heavy. Having completed his work on Mia's back, he now moved to Isabella.
Are you ready? He asked.
Yes, I am, she obeyed. The first press of David's masculine fingers onto her back felt as if she had been caressed by an angel whose wings had wrapped themselves around her frame and enveloped her in loving, healing energy. She literally felt a tingling sensation as his fingertips connected with her skin. The heaviness in her eyes was now accompanied with small tears which had begun to well up. She felt as though she was going to cry with emotion, but resisted the temptation and tensed her muscles instead.
Try to relax, Isabella, reassured David as he felt the movement of the muscles under the skin. Have you had a massage recently?
No, not recently. It's been a while, she said.
The pulsing motion of his fingers and at times his whole forearm across her back was sending her into a state of euphoria. The smell of the oils, coupled with the physical impact of his body on hers as he began to press more firmly onto her frame, took her off into a higher realm of fantasy. In this, she envisioned David climbing onto the table with her, his groin pressing into the curves of her bottom, rhythmically sliding up and down her long back, using the oils to gently, then firmly massage her back with his strong chest and arms. Her exposed, tall neck then felt the wetness of his lips as he leant further forward to kiss her, and then to lick the small hairs at the nape of her neck. His tongue travelled all the way down her spine, centimetre by centimetre, stopping to kiss it at each pause. Her face, still buried in the hole of the table, she could feel him breathing onto her, his lips receiving the oils and now distributing them around her shoulder blades and the tops of her arms. Coming to, she thought she heard David say, "Legs now, ladies," as she struggled to take in what had just happened to her. She couldn't work out if it had been real or not. There was no more sensation in her back as Isabella realised that David had indeed moved away to work on Mia's long legs, grabbing them with both hands and working his thumbs into her muscles and tendons, easing the tensions of the day. And now it was her turn. As he approached her table, David asked her, "Are you okay, Isabella?" Not wishing to display the intensity of her pleasure just yet, she simply replied, "I'm fine, thank you," as she allowed David to grasp her legs and start to massage them enthusiastically. As David reached the sacral curve of her bottom, Isabella resisted the urge to tense her body again and instead allowed David to put his fingers wherever he wanted, freeing herself from the confines of her own mind and soaking herself in the magic of the moment. "Be in the present," she told herself. David continued to work around and across her buttocks as he skillfully moved the small towel with the backs of his hands to allow himself free movement over her entire body. The strength in his fingers was incredible, yet tender and responsive at the same time. Isabella lost track of time as she allowed herself to enter the fantasy realm again to feel his fingers exploring every single part of her willing body. It was now his, totally. Mia let out a little cough to indicate that she had now turned over and to encourage David to perhaps pay her some more attention. He dutifully obliged, moving back to her table and into the central position. This time, He continued the work on her legs and feet before moving his big hands slowly up her body over her groin and tummy. Here he worked in a circular motion, encouraging the workings of the internal organs, up the right side of her body and down the left. As he came to her chest, she saw him take a deep inhale of breath and his eyes closed. He worked his hands around and over the tenderness of her breasts. Isabella began to turn over and suddenly realized that David would definitely recognize her, as he would see her face in this room for the first time. Surely he would then say something, she thought. However, as he turned to start work on her feet and legs, there was no sign of awkwardness, as he professionally worked on all the pressure points on the soles of her feet and ankles and progressed manfully up her strong legs to her groin and stomach area. Again he worked in a circular motion, finding the key chakra point just below the belly button and pushing his fingers into her skin there. Although she tried to resist, Isabella could not stop her hips from rising at this point, presenting herself to him. His hand straightened, but he did not make it descend further, and she brought her hips back down onto the table to feel his hands move over her chest and breast. Again, he gave no outward sign of interest. His face was still, and his eyes were closed at this point. He worked his fingers onto her shapely collarbones and the recesses above them. Moving in one motion with both hands onto the curve of her shoulders, Isabella begged him to kiss her now, so that she could feel those perfect lips onto hers. The room was spinning for Isabella now, and she too had to close her eyes to recover her composure. David moved to the foot of the tables and thanked the women for their participation. "Will I see you again?" he said. "I'm sure you will," said Mia, thinking it was a strange turn of phrase for David to use. Isabella was in no fit state to answer. As she gathered the towel around her body, she merely smiled as she felt her womanhood throb with a series of pulsing sensations. She had not felt this good in quite a long while, that's for sure. Chapter 16. Locking Michelangelo's studio behind her, Francesca insisted the guards escorted her home, as it was still very early in the morning and the streets of the city were very unsafe. She also thought this would convince them that she had nothing to hide. Francesca trusted Maria Elena with the precious scrolls and said goodbye to her with a warm embrace and a whispered comment. "Please put the scrolls somewhere safe, somewhere where they will come to no harm." Arriving home, her confused dogs were there to greet her. Francesca dismissed the human guards, much preferring her animal ones to look after her from now on. The dogs were anxious for their morning walk by the river, and Francesca duly obliged, taking them for a lengthy stroll by the water as soon as the morning sun had cleared the buildings on the outskirts of the city. She loved Florence at this time of the day, the waking children crying for their mothers through the shuttered buildings, the shopkeepers arriving early to catch the early morning trade, and the fishermen already busy on the river trying to get their morning catch. The dogs were pulling hard on their ropes, desperate to get into the water to play. Francesca knew the relatively safe places to let them go into the water, but she would never let them swim free of the rope in this stretch close to the city. It was sometimes full of rubbish and definitely not safe due to the strong currents. At weekends, she would often take them further upstream, where it was safer to let them loose. Ideally, she would take them out of the city to the countryside and let them run free through the endless fields, ponds and streams while she ran behind them, playing catch-up. She thought about that for the coming weekend, but all plans were on hold at the moment while she worried about Michelangelo. How could she even contemplate enjoying life and making plans for the future while he held himself in his own self-inflicted captivity? She decided to go to him that evening to try to convince him to go to her family's cottage in the hillside. He would be more comfortable and safer there, she was sure. The morning sun was now heating the stone walls around her and the earth beneath her feet, so Francesca called the dogs to her and walked the short distance home to prepare for another painful day in the Medici court. She would like to remove herself from that place, to move on to something different and safer, somewhere where she could express herself and free her mind. She felt imprisoned there, captured by the foul atmosphere and the internal politics and rivalries, the jealousies and the lies that circled all around her. Arriving home for already the second time that morning, Francesca gave the dog some more clean water and took the early morning shower before her light breakfast. As she dressed, she tidied the cloak over the dress she had worn earlier that morning and gently undid the small package she had hidden there, away from the eyes of the prying soldiers. It was the little statue of the angel, Isabella. She wondered when Michelangelo would have carved this and for whom. In her dream, of course, it was for her, as she had been given her by the master himself at the picnic. But was that a real memory from her childhood, or just her imagination working overtime? She hid the carving at the back of one of the small cupboards in her bedroom, under some clothes and wooden boxes containing heavy shoes. No one would find it there. She must remember to ask Michelangelo who the carving was for, if he could remember. Now ready, her hair held in a headscarf to save it bleaching further in the sunlight, she gave the dogs one more love and busied to work. Along the way, she caught the smell of freshly baked bread on nearly every street corner. It was so reminiscent of this city. Something about the flour the bakers were using, or the yeast, gave the bread a distinctive smell and taste. She adored it. On the corner nearest the Uffizi buildings, she collected some fresh fruit from an old woman whose dark fingers seemed crippled with arthritis, bent and full of pain. "Bless you, my beautiful child," she said as she handed Francesca her purchases. The day was long and hard. Endless meetings about nothing, followed by argumentative men coming to her office to demand the latest court papers for this and that. All of it seeming trivial and unimportant to her now, as she continued the charade of being gainfully employed in the service of the family. In truth, she hated them for what they had forced Michelangelo to do. Then again, she began to blame herself. Perhaps he would not have gone into hiding if she had not told him of the Medici's displeasure at his support for the failed republic. She knew Michelangelo was still respected by the church, especially the papal offices, but how to convince this warring family of that? Perhaps time itself would be the healer, but how long could an aging Michelangelo cope in his dungeon alone? In the early evening, she returned home again, physically tired and mentally exhausted. The dogs, of course, were there to greet her and to comfort her, both of them curling around her as she attended to her household chores. She made herself a light supper and packed some bread for Michelangelo into a light linen cloth. She poured some fresh water into a carafe which had once held the most delicious wine from the nearby Tuscan hillsides, and she paused as she did so. She closed her eyes to imagine being there again, free of spirit and mind to wander the hillsides with Michelangelo, listening to his stories or to him reciting his wonderful poetry to her. Leaving the dogs confused once more, she departed the house with the bread and water and headed for the basilica. As she neared the building, she could see soldiers she recognised from the Medici family and worried that her master might have been discovered. Then she heard the choir singing in the chapel, the sound travelling into the nearby streets as the doors were left open to catch the late evening cooling breeze. The activity at the entrance to the church allowed her to slip unnoticed into the passageway leading under the basilica where Michelangelo was hiding. Above the echoing sounds from above, she sang the password and he came to open the door for her, almost falling onto her as he did so. "My dearest Francesca, my dear, you have come. Thank you for this blessing, thank you. Did you get the note I sent for you with your friend?" "I did indeed, my master, and I am so grateful for your words," she cried. "I told you, I am not your master. We only have one master, and he is God above," he complained. "Of course I must come to you, but I just have to be very careful," she said. Setting the carafe of water and the bread, Francesca looked again at the drawings on the wall, which were now coming into view as her eyes got accustomed to the half-light. The sounds from the choir above were louder here, not fully distinct, but coming through a ventilation grate in their ceiling, which must have been in the floor of the basilica. "We must be quiet," Michelangelo said. "There is a service going on above. Did you manage to get to my studio?" "Yes, we did, Maria Elena and I visited this morning. I took the scrolls as you described, and Maria Elena has them in her safekeeping. There were many containing drawings for the Pietà. Tell me, who was the model for the statue, if you don't mind me asking? Your mother, of course. She was so innocent and beautiful, and she had the skin like porcelain. She sat for me for several days when you were a child. I had to make her bigger in the modelled form than Christ, so that she could be seen holding him across her lap. I'm pleased with the result, and I do not know if I will ever produce work of such eloquence and purity. Master, you will, I know you will. What of David? He is beautiful too. Everyone who sees him marvels at his size and frame, and the fact that you modelled him from one piece of discarded marble. Who else but you could have produced work of such beauty? My dear, there are many great artists all around us. Look at this man Leonardo da Vinci. He is as popular already as I ever was, Michelangelo mused. Signor Buonarroti, you have glory ahead of you still, I know it. Believe in yourself. This isolation is only temporary, I assure you. I hope you are right, my daughter. I hope you are right. With that, the pair fell into silent contemplation. The moment was still, the air motionless, and the sounds from above quiet as the chapel fell into prayer. Michelangelo dropped to his knees and prayed with the congregation, crossing himself as he did so. He was a deeply pious man, and no amount of incarceration was going to hold him from practicing his faith. Amen, he called as the prayers ended. Amen, echoed Francesca as she stood up to help Michelangelo rise. You must go now, he said. It is getting very late. Thank you for sharing these moments with me and for bringing me sustenance. I am deeply honoured and grateful. It is my pleasure. I just hope the circumstances could be different. They will be one day, he said. They will be. Michelangelo gave Francesca the lightest of kisses to both cheeks, and she left silently into the space of the night. She hid her face with a dark woolen scarf and hurried home to the love and comfort of her most trusted companions, Luna and Rosa. As she did so, she realised that she had forgotten to ask Michelangelo about Isabella. Was she really hers? She hoped so. She sincerely hoped so.
Chapter 17. David allowed the women to rest on the massage tables for several minutes as he disappeared from view. The women lay in silence, not looking at each other at first, taking the pleasure deep into their bodies and souls. The quietness drowned out the sound of the music, which, if present, was inaudible. Slowly, they began to stir and turned to face each other.
How was that for you? Asked Mia first. Pretty good, understated Isabella. He certainly knows what he's doing. I told you you'd like it, didn't I? Queried Mia. I didn't doubt it, said Isabella. I was just a bit nervous because he's also my English teacher. Forget about that. He wouldn't have recognised you, responded Mia. I know. I've worked it out for myself, replied Isabella. He's blind, isn't he? Yes, how did you know? By the way he moved around the room, he felt the edges of the table all the time to orientate himself. Then when he was preparing the oils, he did it without looking. I sneaked a peek to have a look at his bum while he stood over there. It now made sense that David had his sister to act as his mobility guide for the university classes. He could teach the class perfectly well himself, especially the computer stuff, once he knew the layout of the room. It also didn't worry her now that he might have seen her in the sculpture gallery. Even though he had been looking straight in her direction, he couldn't see her, of course. Mia and Isabella jumped down from the tables in their elated states and slowly got showered and dressed again. The oil had seeped into their hair, and Isabella, in particular, wanted to make sure she got it all out before she went home. Shall we go for a drink or something to eat? Suggested Mia, excitedly. I'm expecting a call. Who from this time? Questioned Isabella. Wouldn't you like to know? Well, you will, as soon as they call, because this is just for you. Well, for me as well, but it's mainly for you. Just tell me what it is, please. No,
It will spoil the surprise, and trust me, it's worth waiting for. Isabella was not sure whether she liked these guessing games or not, but she knew, being Mia, it was going to be something big, and, as she said herself, worth waiting for. So she would just have to learn to be patient just a little longer. The friends left the spa arm in arm and strolled through the still busy streets to go to one of their favourite restaurants near the Museo Novecento. Settling into their seats under the attentive gaze of the handsome waiters, Mia smiled as she looked at her friend. Have I ever told you just how beautiful you are? She said. No, why would you? Replied Isabella. Because you are, said Mia. Your skin is so perfect, and your smile is so natural. Your hair is always perfection personified, and your eyes are like two huge beaming sapphires. No wonder all the men and women admire you. Thank you. I don't know what to say. You're not so ugly yourself. Isabella was struggling for something to say to her old friend for once. No more was said while the women scanned the menus and ordered their drinks and light starters. What are you having, darling? Asked Isabella. I fancy fish. I need the vitamins and the oils, said Mia. Then I'll join you. That's a good idea. Though it's getting late, I don't usually eat after a certain time, and I've got to get home to my babies soon. They'll be hungry and need their evening walk. I know, said Mia, but they're quite quick here. You'll be okay. Having ordered and waited no more than 15 minutes for their food to arrive, the women ate in relative quiet, taking in the long day's events. They had packed a lot into their bank holiday. Finishing the meal, they settled the bill jointly and sat sipping on their delicious Chianti. Tourists walked by with a collection of accents, some of which they recognised, others they didn't. They played this game where they tried to guess people's nationalities by what they were wearing and their mannerisms. They were often spot on when it could be evidenced or proved by a recognisable accent. She's British. Look at what she's wearing at this time of night, said Mia, pointing at an overdressed woman sweating profusely in a thick cardigan and heavy dress. And they're American, said Isabella. Well, that's not hard. You can hear them from here. Which state are they from, though? Challenged Mia. Just then, Mia's phone rang, and she turned slightly away from her friend to take the call. Si, mi agavioli, si, pronto. Si, perfetto, perfetto. Si. Isabella had never seen Mia so excited. She was literally bouncing up and down in her seat, drawing attention to herself from everyone around them. Mia, stop it, calmed Isabella. Mia ended the call, clasped the phone to her chest and closed her eyes, tilting her head backwards as she did so. Who was that? Asked Isabella. That, my dearest, most beautiful, and now may I add most lucky friend, was someone I worked with many years ago. And so? Didn't you say you have tickets to see Bob Dylan in Milan in early July? Yes, replied Isabella, my bags are already packed. Well, you're still going to see him, but you're also going to see him. What the hell do you mean? I have been asked to write an article on the gig by my old contact, and that, my darling, means that you, as my plus one, will be going backstage with me to do the interview. Isabella was not sure she could take in what her friend had just said. Bob was everything to Isabella. Her inspiration, her soul buddy, her guide, her alien muse. All Isabella could do was sit silent and still in her chair, trying not to explode and trying, desperately trying, to breathe. Chapter 18. Francesca awoke early, even though it was her day of rest, and she did not have to attend the Medici court today. She was mightily relieved. She determined to visit Michelangelo again to ask him about moving and about Isabella. There was the danger that visiting him in daylight might expose her, but she couldn't wait until nightfall. She must at least try. The dogs were as alert as ever. They wanted feeding and walking, but most of all, as she came down the wooden stairs of her dwelling,
They wanted her attention and affection. They were still very playful young puppies, with different characters already, both very giving and loving. They gave her the closeness and comfort she wanted in her life. She was not sure that there was space for anyone else. "Come, Luna. Come, Rosa. Let's go for a walk." The dogs didn't need a second invitation, and they gladly obeyed, walking in front of her, in unison, down towards the river, as always. The day was warming up to be very hot, the rains of the past few days having subsided. The dryness of the air was an indication as to how hot it was going to be, so she quickly made her way down to their favourite spot by the river to cool down in one of the safe spaces where there was no strong current. As Francesca sat by the riverbank in silent and mellow contemplation, carefully watching the dogs splash and play as she did so, she became aware of someone else at the water's edge, a tall young man with long, dark, thick, black hair. "Antonio Riva, is that you?" asked Francesca. "Francesca Fabrizia, good morning. How very nice to see you here. Are these your dogs?" "They are beautiful," he asked. "They are indeed, Antonio. What are you doing home?" "I thought you were at university in Bologna," she asked. "I am. Well, I was. We have examinations at the moment, so I'm free to come home to prepare for my final interviews. I only have one left now, but it's the final one and in many ways the most important one. If I fail this one, then my 4 years there have been wasted," he replied. "I'm sure you will not fail. Your father tells me you've been doing very well so far." "Indeed, but you can never tell. It doesn't pay to be overconfident." "That's very true, Antonio, but I'm sure everything is going to be all right." Francesca had known Antonio all her life. She had had, in many ways, a privileged education, especially for a girl, and Antonio was just a few years behind her in school. She had always liked him. Now he had grown to be a fine young man, with good prospects in international trade and economics, which he had been studying. She obviously shared similar interests, and they were very well matched in that regard. "Do you know what has become of Michelangelo Buonarroti, dear Francesca? I know you were very close to him, but it seems he has awakened the displeasure of the Medici family. Never a good thing, I would have thought," he inquired. Francesca didn't know Antonio's political or family allegiances, so she didn't dare trust him at this stage. There was too much at stake. Again, she had to force a lie to come out of her lips. "I don't. I presume he has escaped the city. He has been missing for 6 weeks now, so I believe. But you are right. The Medici family are not pleased with his actions while they were away from the city." Francesca already felt that she had said more than she should have done, so she deliberately left the conversation drift away from the subject of Michelangelo for a while. "May I help you with your dogs, Francesca?" asked Antonio. "Will they come to me?" "They will if you stand with me and gain their trust. Let's see," suggested Francesca. She whistled to the dogs to come ashore, and they dutifully obeyed. As they left the Arno, they paused to vigorously shake off the water from their thick, curly fur. "They will get very hot very quickly in this heat. I must get them home presently." "Let me hold one of them for you," offered Antonio. "Rosa is perhaps more likely to be all right with you, so if you take her, I'll have this one. She's called Luna, but she's quite spirited and lively." They split the rope and took one dog each, Luna walking ahead so that Antonio could follow with Rosa. Both dogs were, for once, impeccably behaved. "Can I see you again before I go back to Bologna?" asked Antonio, leaning against the wall at the perimeter to Francesca's enclosed garden. "That would be nice," she replied, rather too quickly for her own liking. "When do you have to return to Bologna?" "In 5 days' time. Then I will return a week after that. I have to collect all my things and decide where my life leads me." "It's an exciting time of your life, I'm sure. The world lies ahead of you," answered Francesca. Antonio was indeed a very handsome man, athletic and strong, with broad shoulders and a visibly energetic body. He constantly moved while he spoke to her, either flexing his arms or legs, but looking straight at her intently. He very much liked what he saw. "Let's agree to meet tomorrow. Perhaps we could go for a picnic outside the city with the dogs," suggested Francesca boldly. "That would be very nice, a fine suggestion," agreed Antonio. "Thank you." Francesca slowly closed the wooden gate in front of her as she backed into her yard,
the dogs safe to run inside the house on their own. After resting for a while, and after attending to her household chores, Francesca dressed as if she was going shopping for food, and left the house again to visit Michelangelo. The city did not seem quite as chaotic as usual, and she decided that perhaps people had done what she intended to do the next day, and had already left the stifling heat of the city to go into the countryside. Michelangelo was surprised, but very pleased to see her again so soon, and very grateful for the extra bread she had purchased on her way to the basilica. "Dear Michelangelo, I meant to suggest yesterday that you move into the countryside. Don't you think that you might be safer there?" asked Francesca. "I don't know, my child. There's risk all around from what you tell me. And how would I escape from here? Do you have any suggestions?" asked the master. "No, not at the moment. But if you agree with it, I will surely think of something." "Let me consider it. I have got used to this place, and as you can see, I have been busy again." There were more drawings on the walls. Men, women, children, lots of pious scenes inspired by the religious setting in which he found himself, no doubt. These were evidently sketches which could so easily be turned into wonderful stone carvings when he could be free from his incarceration. She hoped it would be soon. "Michelangelo, when I was searching your cupboard for the scrolls of the Pietà, I found a small stone angel, not marble, but a soft white stone. Do you know its history?" she asked. "Of course I do," said Michelangelo. "It is yours. I carved it for you as a young child when your family invited me to your olive grove. I used to visit your father there a lot, especially in the summer." "How did it come to be in your studio?" asked Francesca. "I'm really not sure. I think I remember your father telling me that you had lost it at one time. You used to come with your father to my studio when he came to discuss various building projects. Perhaps you left it there yourself, or hid her as part of a game," suggested Michelangelo. "May I keep her, Signor Buonarroti? I promise to look after her this time," promised Francesca. "Of course, my dearest. Love will always find its way back home. You are united again now. She is my gift to you once more,"